It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to this edition of the RTC Weekly Download. Today we're going to start off with a variety program made during World War II for the military called Command Performance. And this is a 30-minute show, and it features Chico Marx, Jack Benny, and Linda Romay from 1946.
USA, the greatest entertainers in America, as requested by you, the men and women in the United States Armed Forces throughout the world. Command Performance, presented this week and every week, till you're back from over there. Hi, fellows, this is Ken Carpenter, back again to say hello to you wherever you may be. We hope that means you're right beside your radio, because we've shuffled together a batch of your latest requests, and believe me, this week we really got a stacked deck. Our ace in the hole is our master of ceremonies, the star of Lady Luck, and here he is, Robert Young.
Thank you, Ken, and hello, gang. Now, men, you've asked for her, and here she is. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's great young singing star, the vivacious, gracious, and bodacious, Lena Romay. Welcome to Command Performance, Lena.
Yes, Lena, welcome to Command Performance. Welcome like anything.
Ooh. Well, thank you, Bob, and you too, Ken.
Yes, thanks for the assist, Ken.
Oh, that's all right, Bob. Move over, will you?
Gentlemen, I'm overwhelmed. All this warmth and affection for one little song and one little singer.
I just can't help it, Lena. I'm just nuts about little songs.
Well, Ken, maybe I can calm you down with that feeling in the moonlight.
I don't think that's the way to go about it, Lena, but let's try it.
Did you ever get that feeling in the moonlight? That wonderful feeling that you want to be kissed. You're strolling in the park, the stars so bright above. You'd love to love somebody, but there's nobody there to love. Did you ever get that longing on a June night? That wonderful longing you can never resist. Did you ever get that feeling in the moonlight? That feeling that said you want to be kissed. Everybody now and then gets a little lonely. There's always a reason why. I know what it means to be lonely, even as you. You'd love to love somebody, but there's nobody there to love. Did you ever get that longing on a June night? That longing you just can't resist. Did you ever get that feeling? as you wanna be. Feeling that says you ought to be. Feeling that says you gotta be.
Every century or so, civilization produces a great musical genius. The 19th century gave forth the matchless European violin virtuoso, Usai. But we in the 20th century are more fortunate, for we have been gifted with a number of musical geniuses whose names will live forever. There's Yasha Heifetz, the incredibly nimble-fingered violinist. Gregor Piatigorsky, the eminently successful cellist. I knew I'd get it. And as our guest on this command performance, we have the honor to present one of the greatest artists who ever lived. You've heard of Tchaikovsky, Bertelli, Rimsky-Korsakov.
Hey, Bob, that sounds like the Notre Dame football team.
None other than Chico Marx.
Hey, Dave, I'd like to play something, but Dave, you got someone going to help me a little bit?
Got just a man for you.
What do you got?
We've got a nice violin player for you, Lou Thompson.
Lou? Where's the Lou? Hey, Lou. Oh. How do you do, Lou?
Fine.
You know Gypsy Love Song?
Gypsy Love Song. I know the chorus.
You know the chorus, eh? In the mic, no.
I know the chorus, Chico.
Well, if I play the voice, maybe you could follow me, eh?
Well, you play the verse and I'll noodle around.
You going to noodle around?
I'll noodle a little.
What do you mean by noodling it?
Well, I don't know how to explain it. Just...
That's fine. You noodle on that and I'll... You noodle on that thing and I'll macaroni on this. Look, Lou, I know you got a lot of friends out here and you want to... I know you want to make good, but don't play better than me, will you? Playing the same thing. Slow leak, you got. That's very good, though. Now we try the chorus. But the chorus we're going to play pianissimo. You know pianissimo, eh?
Pianissimo? No, I don't know.
You don't know what pianissimo is? How long have you studied music?
15 years.
15. You know, 2 more years, you could have been a plumber. 15 years. All right, I tell you what we do. We make it very simple. We play it allegro pizzicato. Hey, fellas, allegro pizzicato. You know allegro pizzicato.
Never heard of it. I never heard of it.
You know any of the pizzicatos? You must have been with Spike Jones's band. All right, do you know what pistachio is?
Pistachio, I know.
Play pistachio. Thank you.
you, Chico Marx.
That's a theme song. It sounds mighty familiar.
Yes, Ken, and it will be familiar to the fellows overseas, too. Because if they have long stateside radio memories, they'll know it heralds the appearance of one of the finest quartets in the business. And here they are singing the song you want to hear, The Charioteers.
Every night when the moon is shining bright on a Rio de Janeiro, comes a gent with a mellow instrument and a colorful sombrero. Then he sings and the melody he brings so tenderly plays. It's called a Gaucho Serenade. La 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 la. Si, senor, he's a happy troubadour on a patio to find him. Si, senor, he will go from door to door leaving happiness behind him. All the sweet senoritas hurry out to join the parade and hear the gaucho serenade. La 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 la.
Every night when the moon shines bright on Rio de Janeiro, then he sings and the melody he brings so tenderly played. It's called a Gaucho Serenade. La 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 la. Si, senor, he's a happy troubadour on a patio to find him. Si, senor, he will go from door to door leaving happiness behind him. All the sweet senoritas hurry out to join the parade and hear the gaucho serenade.
Oh, the gaucho serenade. The gaucho serenade. The gaucho serenade.
Many of you men overseas have tuned in your radio to hear the thrilling dramas on Suspense. One of the highlights in the series has been the unforgettable performance of Agnes Moorehead in Sorry, Wrong Number. Here at home, the response of both critics and public was so enthusiastic that Miss Moorehead was called upon to repeat the playlet several times. On each occasion, she gave a stirring, vivid portrayal as the neurotic woman who hears a murder being plotted over cross telephone wires and finally learns that the intended victim of the murder is herself. Miss Moorehead's characterization is truly an incomparable study in terror. Tonight we had hoped to bring you this great radio drama, Sorry, Wrong Number. Miss Agnes Moorehead, unfortunately, was unable to be with us. So we secured the services of another personality with the same dynamic appeal. None other than Jack Benny. We now take you to Mr. Benny's home in Beverly Hills, where we find Jack sitting anxiously by the telephone waiting. Nerves shattered. Another victim of suspense.
Busy, busy, busy. It can't be busy all this time. Operator, operator. Quiet, Polly. Operator, operator.
I'm sorry, that line is busy.
Listen, operator, I've been trying to get that number for the last 20 minutes. It's a big advertising agency. They have a switchboard.
I'm sorry, the line is busy.
It can't be busy. I've been ringing that number since 25 after 11. Do you know what time it is now?
For the correct time, dial Ulrich 8900.
Operator, I know what time it is. It's 11:45.
11:45.
Holly, quiet. Listen, operator. I'm a subscriber. I pay my bills every month, and since I've been on this phone, I've had nothing but trouble.
Trouble? One moment, please. I will connect you.
Repair department.
That's not my trouble. What do I have to do to get Hillside 7593?
Just call the operator.
Oh, my goodness. Why can't I? Operator. Operator.
Number, please.
Look, operator. I want Hillside 7593.
You may dial that number direct.
I did dial the number. I keep getting a busy signal. That's what I've been trying to tell you. Look, operator, I'm Jack Benny. I have a radio program. My option comes up at 12 o'clock tonight. If I don't hear from my sponsor, Mr. Jones, in 15 minutes, I'll be out of a job. He's the advertising manager. I'm trying to get him on the phone, and I can't get the number.
I will connect you with information.
Operator, don't you understand? I don't want information.
This is information.
Look, I don't want it. I want Sevenside Hill, 593. I mean Hillside, 7593.
You may dial that number direct.
Look, I've tried it direct. Indirect and spelled backwards. Now, what do I have to do to get Hillside 7593?
You may dial that number direct.
Oh, nuts. I don't know what to do. This is driving me mad. It keeps getting later, later.
11:45.
Polly, quiet. Besides, it's 10 minutes of 12 now. Your watch is slow. Well, I'll try. Whoop! There it is. It's my sponsor. He's calling me. Hello?
Mr. Benny?
Yes.
It's 50 words or less, isn't it?
The contest is over. Fine time to ask about my contest. If my sponsor doesn't call me pretty soon, I'll go nuts. I still have 8 minutes. I got to reach Mr. Jones by 12 o'clock. Polly, quiet. Here's a cracker. And eat it slowly. It might be your last. Well, I'll try that number again. Can't be still busy. I know it can't. I'm sure there must be something wrong with the...
Hello? Is that you, Mr. Jones?
Mr. Jones, that's my sponsor. Mr. Jones, this is me, Jack Benny.
Hello, George?
They can't hear me. The wires must be crossed.
Yes, George. I've thought the matter over thoroughly, and I've decided to let him go.
I see. Well, it's going to be quite a shock to him. He's been with us a long time.
Well, George, he's had it coming. His work has fallen off so badly, it isn't funny anymore.
Yipe! Talking about me. Mr. Jones, operator.
Well, Mr. Jones, don't you think you ought to warn him and give him another chance? It might be difficult to replace him.
That's right. Tell him, George. Tell him. Nice boy, George. Tell him.
No, George. I've made up my mind. I think we should look for a younger man.
Younger? Why, I'm only 37.
37.
37
and 37,
that's
75.
That's 74, you dope. Can't you count?
So you don't think warning him would do any good, eh, Mr. Jones?
No, he's had his chance.
Mr. Jones, please, George had a swell idea. Warn me. Give me another chance. I might be difficult to replace. Tom Brenneman is so busy, and he has to get up so early in the morning.
Well, all right, Mr. Jones, I'll let him...
I've been cut off. Operator.
Number, please.
Operator, I want Hillside 7953. Will you please get it for me?
You may dial that number direct.
But I've been dialing all morning. My fingers are so swollen, they don't fit into the hole.
One moment, please. I will try that number for you.
Thank you. Only 5 minutes to go. I can only talk to Mr. Jones. If I could just plead with him. Beg him like I did last year. Maybe I could talk him into giving me another...
Sorry, that line is busy.
Busy. What am I going to do? I got to think fast.
Busy.
Polly, shut up. This is serious. You may have to go to work. 11:54. Wait a minute, I know. I'll call my agent. That's it, my agent. Why am I paying him 9%? I'll try and get him. That might be Mr. Jones. Oh, hello?
Hello, is that you, Edna?
Edna?
This is Johnny McGuire. I just got back from the South Pacific. I haven't seen a woman in 3 years. You're the first one I called.
Look, you must have the wrong number.
Oh, don't give me that, Edna. I recognize your voice right away.
Look, but I...
Now, what do you say, Edna? Let you and me step out tonight and I'll buy you a nice big dinner.
Look, I'm telling you, you have the wrong... Dinner? No, what am I thinking of? He'd only want to... I'm sorry, you have the wrong number. I wish I was, Edna. At least then I'd know where... Oh, my goodness, only 3 minutes of 12. No time to call my agent now. I gotta get Mr. Jones. Maybe he hasn't signed anybody else yet. I'll tell him I'll do anything he asks me. Anything. I'll let him cut my salary. This year I'll suggest it myself. The line's clear. It's not busy. I still have time.
This is Hillside, 7593.
Get me Mr. Jones, quick. This is Jack Bendy.
Mr. Jones is busy on another line. Would you call back?
No. I'll hold on. Oh, hurry, Mr. Jones, hurry. You haven't got much time. I mean, I haven't got much time. Hello?
Hello.
Is that you, Mr. Jones? How about you, Polly? Shut your big mouth.
Hello? What's that?
Mr. Jones, I wasn't talking to you, Mr. Jones. It wasn't your big mouth, it was my parrot. This is Jack Benny.
Oh, well, Jack, I'm glad you called. I wanted to tell
you... Mr. Jones, please, before you say anything, listen to me. You gotta listen to me. I know I've been on the air a long time, but I'm not through yet. Honest, I'm not. There's still a few good years left in me, and I want you to have them.
But, Jack...
I know I've made mistakes, Mr. Jones. Everybody makes mistakes. I mean, everybody but you, Mr. Jones. You always do the right thing. You're wise, smart, intelligent, kind. That's it, kind. You're too kind to cast me aside like an old shoe. Give me another chance. Please, Mr. Jones. Don't drop my option.
Why, Jack, what are you crying about? We've no intention of letting you go.
Honest, Mr. Jones, if you'll only give me... What? You mean you're going to pick up my option?
Why, certainly. I've been trying to call you all morning. Your phone's been busy.
My phone? Busy? Oh.
Tell me, Jack, whatever gave you the idea we wouldn't take up your option?
Well, Mr. Jones, I called you a few minutes ago and the wires got crossed. I heard you talking to a man named George.
George? Oh, yes, he's my office manager.
Well, I overheard you telling him to let somebody go. You wanted a younger man.
Oh, I remember, certainly. I discharged him this morning. It was the janitor.
The janitor?
Yes.
Oh, the janitor. Well, the joke's certainly on me. Well, Mr. Jones, if the man wasn't doing his work, what else could you do? It's not your fault if a man isn't capable. There's no place for sentiment in business, Mr. Jones. That's what I like about you, Mr. Jones. You don't let your heart rule your head. That janitor got what was coming to him. I don't believe in a man whining and trying to hang on to a job when he's not wanted. I agree with you. If a man fails to deliver, let him go. Get rid of him, I say. Fire him!
Thank you, Agnes Moorhead. Jack Benny. And your cast of splendid performers. On my way to the studio tonight, something very funny happened. Nothing. But I did meet a man a lot of you have wanted to hear on command performance. He's a fine orchestra conductor, at the same time one of the outstanding arrangers and composers of the present day. You've heard his Holiday for Strings and Our Waltz. Now here he is in person, ex-Sergeant David Rowe.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction, Bob.
Oh, it was nothing, Dave. Nothing, really.
Oh, yes, it was. You don't know how wonderful those words sound. Ex-sergeant.
I see what you mean. Dave, how about leading the orchestra through your own treatment of Humoresque? Thank you. you, David Rowe. There you have it, man, the 209th command performance. And believe me, all of us regard it as a privilege and an honor to appear on this program in answer to your requests. So keep those letters coming. As long as you're over there facing problems that must be faced and dealt with so that your country can accept its full responsibility to the family of nations, we here at home will be yours to command for good entertainment in the hope that shows like this will make your task a little more agreeable. This is Bob Young. Good night.
We're going to continue on with a musical theme for another 15 minutes with a program called Guest Star. And this was, I believe, a syndicated program that might have been selling bonds. Well, we'll find out about that in just a moment. Anyway, the guest star is Nat King Cole from 1948.
The United States Savings Bonds Division presents Guest Star. How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is your host, Wynne Elliott, introducing another in the series of transcribed feature programs known as Guest Star, brought to you each week at this time by United States Savings Bonds and this station as a public service. Let it serve as a reminder that there is no finer investment in the world today than a United States Savings Bond. Buy savings bonds regularly and make your future secure. Occupying the spotlight on today's guest star program is a trio, which is well known to audiences on the air, on phonograph records, and in some of the country's leading theaters and supper clubs. The King Cole Trio. Before we bring them to our microphone, however, here's an opening selection by Harry Sosnick and the Savings Bonds Orchestra. Fascinating Rhythm. now for today's guest stars, the King Cole Trio, who are joining a program direct from Cleveland, where they're making a personal appearance. It's my pleasure to introduce Nat King Cole.
Hello, everybody. Glad to be with you on the guest star program. Here's a little tune we hope you like, and it's called Almost Like Being in Love.
What a day this has been. What a rare mood I'm in. Why, it's almost like being in love. There's a smile on my face for the whole human race. Why, it's almost like being in love. All the music of life seems to be like a bell that is ringing for me. And from the way that I feel when that bell starts to peal, I would swear I was falling. I could swear I was falling. Why, it's almost like being in love. Life seems to be like a bell that is ringing for me. And from the way that I feel when that bell starts to peal, I would swear I was falling. Swear I was falling. Why, it's almost like being in love.
Oh, gee, that was swell. How about another number, Nat?
We've got another little number here that we recorded not so long ago. The name of it is Those Things Money Can't Buy.
To walk and talk with you in the moonlight, to share a kiss for each star in the sky, to know you care, care, care for me only. Those things money can't buy. To have a one-way ticket to heaven, upon the wings of a dream we can fly. To know I'll never, never be lonely. Those things money can't buy. To have a perfect understanding is worth its weight in gold. But dear, a perfect understanding you can't buy. You know why? It ain't so. To have and hold you forever, to know our love will not die, to hear you whisper, darling, I love you. Those things money can't buy.
Thank you, King Cole Trio. We'll have you back again in just a moment. Meanwhile, here is Harry Sosnick and the Savings Bonds Orchestra playing Wildflower. Now, let's swing back to Cleveland again for a short message from King Cole himself. Here he is, Nat King Cole.
I'm glad all you folks enjoyed our little program today. And before I go, I'd like to say a couple of words about saving bonds. You know, folks, there's nothing nicer than a little nest egg of bonds to make you feel secure. They're the best way I know of to put a little money away for that old rainy day. For two reasons. First, because they're absolutely safe, and second, because they're profitable. You get back $4 for every three you put into them in just 10 years. In the meantime, those bonds are right there for you to fall back on in case an emergency comes up. Just like money, better than money, in fact, because you can lose them or have them destroyed or stolen, and the government replaces them for you without charge. So take a tip from me, whatever you want for the future, a home of your own, or an education for your kids, or anything else, start saving for it right now by buying United States saving bonds and buying them regularly. Goodbye, everybody.
You've been listening to Guest Star, one of a series of transcribed feature programs brought to you each week by United States Savings Bonds and this station as a public service. We want to extend our special thanks to the King Cole Trio for being our guests today. It was swell to have them with us. Tune in for another fine program again next week. Meanwhile, this is your host, Wynn Elliott, bidding you goodbye with the suggestion that automatic saving is sure saving. Start now buying United States savings bonds automatically through the payroll savings plan where you work, or if you're not on a payroll, through the bond a month plan where you bank.
Well, next we have for you something that is rather a rarity. You don't hear it often on these OTR repeat programs, but this is a program that was popular in the 30s, and it's called Ripley's Believe It or Not, and it's about a 30-minute program. This one involves nursery rhymes as historical record. So from 8-11 of 1939, here is Ripley's Believe It or Not.
It's amazing, believe it or not. B.A. Rolfe and his orchestra, the men about town, and lovely Linda Lee. And here is that old statistician, Ted Jewett. Why do you suppose Royal Crown sold a million more bottles in the city of Pensacola, Florida, in 1938 than they did in 1936? And why do you suppose Royal Crown sales in Steubenville, Ohio, are 78% ahead of last year? Because Royal Crown tastes better. Because folks like its rich, mellow flavor. Because they like its bubbling pep. Once folks try Royal Crown, they like it. And then they keep on coming back for more. We want you to try Royal Crown. We want every one of you to see for yourselves how delicious and refreshing this wonderful drink really is. So next time you're buying a cola drink, won't you do yourself a favor and say, make mine Royal Crown.
Yeah, man, yoikes. There is yon youthful Yankee yachtsman with his yawl of yanking, yowling, yeomanly yarns. Believe it or not, Bob Ripley.
And a bottle of Royal Crown. And welcome to the program tonight.
Bob, how about a preview of the program?
Why, Linda, I've just discovered some historical facts that I think will be a revelation to all of us. But first, I want to present a man who is a great hero, yet he is unlike any hero I've ever known. But first, let there be music. B.A. Rolfe and the orchestra, step forward in the company of the latest musical personality, the man with the mandolin. Gentlemen, at this time, I would like to tell you about some of the most interesting discoveries that I've ever made in my long career of Believe It or Not. And strangely enough, they are Believe It or Not that I first heard from my mother in the nursery.
Then your mother started you in this Believe It or Not career.
Well, not exactly, Linda. I'm afraid my mother didn't realize that she was giving me my first history lesson or starting me on a career. As a matter of fact, not until very recently did I know that the Mother Goose rhymes, which she sang to me as a child, were some of the most important historical records we have in the English language.
Mother Goose rhymes historical records? I thought they were a lot of childish jingles to put baby to sleep.
Oh, no, Linda. For example, in the olden days in England, there were no newspapers, no telephone, no telegraph, and, of course, no radios. The only way the news of the day could be brought to the people was through wandering minstrels who traveled from place to place and sang out the news. To make it more interesting, they would sing it in rhyme. They were the Walter Winchells of their day, but if they weren't careful, they would have had their heads chopped off. The big events of the day, naturally, concerned the most important people in the land, the king, the queen, the lords and ladies. In other words, the Mother Goose rhymes are nothing more than the very cleverly disguised gossip columns of a few centuries ago.
But, Bob.
Yes, B.A.?
We have the Men About Town here as our guests. Suppose they sing a nursery rhyme, and then you tell us about the Believe It or Not in the rhyme.
Just what we'll do, B.A. You play them, and I'll tell them. So let's have the Men About Town sing Humpty Dumpty.
Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again.
Thank you, boys, and I'm sure everyone will agree that sounds like nothing more than a childish nursery rhyme. But Humpty Dumpty actually is a disguised version of an important event that deeply affected English history. In ancient English, the words Humpty Dumpty meant hunchback, and the hunchback referred to in Humpty Dumpty was none other than Richard III, the murderous and crippled King of England who ruled in the 15th century. He was an undersized, deformed hunchback.
Humpty Dumpty sounds like a good name for him.
But in spite of his appearance, Linda, and his physical defects, he was one of the greatest fighters England ever had. However, he had a rival for the throne, a man called Henry Tudor. Now, Henry got together an army in France, crossed the Channel, and led a rebellion against Richard, or Humpty Dumpty, as he was called. A battle was fought at Bosworth Field, and King Richard was defeated.
How about the wall Humpty Dumpty sat on?
Oh, that wall. That wall, that was the name of the king's favorite horse. One of Henry's soldiers killed the horse, and that's how Humpty Dumpty fell from his horse or the wall. It was then that Richard shouted those historic words, a horse, my kingdom for a horse. But his cry was in vain, for while he was looking for another horse, another spear came hurtling through the air and pierced him through, and King Richard was killed, and all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty together again. The victorious Henry became King Henry VII of England. His son was the famous Henry VIII, and his granddaughter was the famous Queen Elizabeth. So, in the apparently nonsensical words of Humpty Dumpty, we find recorded a most important event that completely changed English history, believe it or not.
Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. There was an old woman who lived in a shoe. She saw many children, didn't know what to do. She gave them some broth without any bread. She whipped them all soundly and put them to bed.
Don't tell me that the old woman who lived in a shoe has an historical
it
meaning.
It has, Linda.
Well, who was this old woman, Bob?
That old woman was James I of England, and the reason they called him the old woman was that he was the first king of England to wear one of those wigs with the curls hanging down on his shoulders.
Oh, but he didn't really live in a shoe.
He did too, Linda. The word shoe was the name of the park in which Whitehall Palace, a royal residence, was built.
How about the many children that he didn't know what to do with?
Oh, those children, as he called them, were the 600 members of Parliament, and weren't they a handful of trouble? They were constantly struggling against the king's denomination. And as the nursery rhyme says, he gave them some broth without any bread.
What's the meaning of broth and bread?
Well, the leader of the English Parliament at that time was a man by the name of Bradley, who was called Bread for short. But the king didn't want Mr. Bread in the Parliament, so he replaced him with a man named Broth.
So that's what they mean by, she gave them some broth without any bread.
Yes, and he whipped them all soundly and sent them to bed. Now, that means that he dissolved Parliament, which was a terrible blow to English liberty at the time. He sent them all home, or as they expressed it in those days, he sent them to bed. And the verse about the old woman who lived in a shoe actually tells the story of the great struggle which went on between the king and Parliament. After James died, his son, Charles I, succeeded him on the throne, and Parliament had him beheaded. Since then, and until the present day, England has lived under a parliamentary form of government. And all that story is charmingly condensed in the nursery rhyme, There Was an Old Woman Who Lived in a Shoe, Believe It or Not.
There was no woman who lived in a shoe. She saw many children, didn't know what to do. She gave them some broth without any bread. She whipped them all soundly and put them to bed.
Bob, that was great. Tell us another one.
All right, Linda, but let me sketch this one for you. It was in the 16th century when Henry VIII ruled England. You remember him, Linda. He was the famous king who had six wives. Well, at that time, a great deal of the land was owned by the Abbot of Glastonbury. Now, King Henry VIII decided to confiscate this land for the crown. But the Abbot of Glastonbury was a very clever man. And rather than defy King Henry and lose everything, he decided to make him a present of 12 huge estates, hoping in this way to pacify the powerful King Henry and also at the same time keep a little of the land for himself. So just before Christmas, he decided upon a very novel way to give King Henry his present. He had a big Christmas pie baked, and instead of raisins or plums, he placed inside the pie the 12 deeds to 12 of his largest estates. As our scene opens, we find the pie all baked and the 12 deeds all safely inside it. The Abbot of Glastonbury is now talking to his errand boy, Jack.
Jack, I have an errand for you.
Aye, Your Grace.
I have had baked a Christmas pie for the king. I want you to take a horse and convey this pie to the king at his palace in London.
Aye, Your Grace.
Don't tarry along the way, and above all, don't break the pie.
It took Jack, the errand boy, several days to make the journey from Glastonbury to London. When he arrived there, he delivered the pie to King Henry VIII himself, handing him the pie with the compliments of the Abbot of Glastonbury. King Henry cautiously opened the pie, and then he spoke.
Lad, it is our royal wish that you thank the good abbot for the pie which he has so graciously sent me. However, the pie looks tampered with, and I wonder why the abbot should send me just 11 deeds to lands and houses. A strange number, 11.
Your Majesty, my master, the Abbot of Glastonbury, truly baked 12 deeds in that pie.
There are only 11 in it now. What became of the 12th?
It is I who removed it, sire.
You removed it? Explain yourself, lad.
Well, since my master, the abbot, gave me nothing for bringing the pie here, I inserted my thumb in the pie and pulled out a deed for my pains.
Your pains? He pulled out a deed, a plum, indeed. A goodly lad. He inserted his thumb and pulled out a plum.
Well, I hope Your Majesty is not offended.
Offended? Quite contrarywise. You put in your thumb and you pulled out a plum. And by Jupiter, that plum shall be yours. What is your name, lad?
Well, my name is John Horner, but they call me Little Jack Horner.
Little Jack Horner.
Little Jack Horner sat in the corner eating a Christmas pie. He put in his thumb and pulled out a plum and said, "What a brave boy am I."
And that is the whole story. Little Jack Horner put in his thumb and pulled out a plum. That plum was the estate and manor of Mells in Somersetshire. And on that estate, Jack Horner built a house called the House That Jack Built, and it stands to the present day. The descendants of Little Jack Horner own that large and valuable estate, which was first obtained by their famous ancestor, Little Jack Horner, who sat in a corner and stuck his thumb in a Christmas pie. So, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the three Mother Goose rhymes. Humpty Dumpty, the old woman who lived in a shoe, and Little Jack Horner. Apparently quaint and charming jingles, nonsense for children, but actually they are disguised versions of the most important historic events of the English-speaking people, believe it or not. ¶¶ time now for the Believe It or Not musical department. Oh, B.A., tell us about the rhythm romance you have for it.
Well, Bob, I'm going to play a number which Bing Crosby featured in the picture East Side of Heaven. The title is Hang Your Heart on a Hickory Limb. Now, Linda Lee and the Men About Town will do some plain and fancy harmonic hanging with us.
I see. Well, as Bing would say, Brother B.A., just dust on those contrapuntal cardiac acrobatics. Okay.
The moon.
Oh, hang your heart on a hickory limb unless you feel like me that love is worth the trouble it can be.
Oh, come on, Linda,
what do you say?
Has love been treating you okay?
Beneath the moon, are you in the groove? Do you go for romance or disapprove?
Well, I think love is a song and dance. Here's the lowdown on sweet romance. I hung my heart on a hickory limb, but the silly thing fell down, and someone kicked my poor old heart around.
You said you hung your heart on a hickory limb,
but the moon got in its eyes.
And how that fickle moon can hypnotize, take you down.
These things wouldn't have happened if I'd kept my head, but in the moonlight, my heart grew instead.
Honey, you hung your heart on a hickory limb,
and I lost it there and then, and yet I'd do the same darn thing again.
And yet I do the same darn thing
got there tonight?
Some cola gelatin.
Say, do you make something different out of cola every week?
Pretty nearly. I like that cola flavor. Why shouldn't I?
Well, no reason in the world. Some folks like chocolate, some like vanilla, but, well, I'll string along with you. Make mine cola.
And make it Royal Crown, because here's a cola drink with a really distinctive flavor. In taste tests from coast to coast in small towns and big cities, folks have voted Royal Crown tops for taste. These were certified tests, sworn to before notaries. And in 9 tests out of 10, the vote went to Royal Crown. Its pep and sparkle, its tang and zest have won friends for it everywhere. So next time you want a long, tall, cooling drink, just ask for Royal Crown. And here he is again, Bob Ripley.
In the good old summertime, everyone looks for the nearest place to swim. And while swimming can be fun, it can also be dangerous. It is one man's heroic defiance of a dangerous, raging river that is the subject of the Believe It or Not I shall sketch for you now. The time, June the 6th, 1930. The place, the home of Richard Brooks, on the steep banks of the Monongahela River near Greensboro, Pennsylvania. As our scene opens, we find Richard Brooks and a friend seated on the porch of his little home. They are facing the river, but Richard Brooks does not see the river, for Richard Brooks is blind. As his friend speaks to him, cries of help come up from the river's edge.
Say, Brooks, listen to those kids down by the river. They're yelling help.
Oh, yelling help is their idea of fun. They're just waiting in the river's edge.
Waiting, huh? Well, if they waded out too far and got caught in that current... Say, there are two kids running this way, Brooks.
What?
Sir Floyd Davis and Johnny Morris.
Mr. Brooks, help us, please.
What's the matter, Floyd?
It's Jimmy. He's caught in the current. He's being carried out to the teapot. He'll drown.
Floyd, you're not playing games,
though. Honest, Mr. Brooks, we're not fooling this time. Please.
Honest,
Mr.
Come
Brooks,
on, Floyd.
Honest.
Lead me to the riverbank. Take my hand. Isn't there anyone out there, boy?
No. There are people there, but they say no man will be able to swim against
their
current.
Mr. Brooks, you're not going into that river. Listen
please,
to
hurry.
Him.
Hurry. Come on, Mr. Brooks.
You're blind. It'll be suicide.
Come along, boys. Brooks. Come along with us, Joe. I know you can't swim, but you can guide me.
Oh, you shouldn't, Brooks.
Oh, hurry, please, Mr. Brooks. You're the only one around here who isn't afraid to go in there.
I'm coming, boys. Oh, I stumbled there.
It's all right now. I'll take your arm. Here, Brooks, now we're almost at the riverbank.
A few more feet.
Careful.
I can feel the edge of the bank now.
Here, climb down here, Brooks. Just 4 steps.
Yeah, right over here.
What about everybody here on the bank? What are they doing?
They won't help Jimmy. No one is nerve enough to go in after him because the current's so fast since the rain.
There isn't a boat around anywhere.
No.
Good night.
Oh, hurry, please.
Oh, but Brooks... That river swelled up 8 feet since last night. It's roaring like Niagara. You got one chance in a million of saving
hurry.
That kid. He's out there more than 200 feet.
I'm going, Joe.
Oh, hurry, Mr. Brooks. Mr. Hurry.
Where is he?
Swim straight ahead, Brooks.
There he goes.
Yeah, yeah. Brooks, to the right. To the right now. All right, straight.
He's going right now.
To the left a little.
Oh, come on,
watch
Mr.
that current.
Brooks, Father, the current's pulling him away downstream.
Brooks, Brooks. Listen to me. Straight ahead now.
Come on,
he's almost in front of you. Faster. He's sinking.
Please, Jimmy, please don't go under.
Straight ahead, only about 10 feet now, Brooks.
Come on, Jimmy, just a little minute more. Please, Jimmy, hey, try.
He's right in front of the Brooks.
Come on, Jimmy.
An arm. Hey, grab him. You'll have to dive, Brooks. He's going under.
Oh, please,
dive, Brooks,
safe.
Dive.
Please, let him safe, Jimmy.
Come look, boys, he's got him.
He's got him.
That's
Jimmy,
ball,
Jimmy.
Brooks.
He's bringing
that's
him back.
Marvelous.
That's the way.
Brooks, swim back.
Oh,
swim back to my boys. Straight to my boys, Brooks. You're all right. Come on. Fight this way. Come to my boys, Brooks. This way! That's right! Swim!
Certainly the heroism of man could not be taxed to a greater extremity than that faced by Richard Brooks. Blind, midstream in a river with a swiftly racing current, a terrified, drowning boy clinging with a vice-like grip to his neck, Richard Brooks faced an ordeal that would challenge the courage of the most fearless man. Richard Brooks won that fight. Grimly, he fought his way through the churning waters and exhausted, delivered the half-drowned boy to the shore and safety. I think that the bravery of Richard Brooks is so utterly splendid that I have brought him here tonight to speak to you. Ladies and gentlemen, I present Richard Brooks.
Good evening, Mr. Ripley.
Richard Brooks, in your own words, won't you tell our audience what happened when you reached the water's edge?
Floyd took me to the edge of the river, and I dove in with all my clothes on.
With all your clothes on?
Yes, sir. And the people from the banks directed me to swim out about 225 foot to tell me to right, to the left, and straight ahead. And they told me to grab ahead of me, and as I grabbed, the boy grabbed me around the neck with a stranglehold.
A stranglehold? That's a very serious hold, you know.
Well, it isn't if you know how to break it. When I broke it, I got a chest grip and started back to shore by the sound of their voice.
Yeah.
And the current got me about halfway in, and I went under once. When I got back to shore, I was exhausted. If I had very much farther to go, I don't believe we could have made it.
You mean, then, that instead of one life being saved, two lives might have been lost?
Yes, sir.
Well, I think your heroic action deserves the highest praise, Richard Brooks, that any man can receive, and I'm sure that my audience will agree with me on that.
I thank you. I thank all.
And thank you, Richard Brooks. You are a true, believe it or not. Now, here's our little girl, Friday. It's Linda Lee time.
And, Bob, I think my song tonight is a Believe It or Not song.
Well, you're right, Linda. Ladies and gentlemen, Linda Lee now is going to sing the most popular song in the country, but believe it or not, it was written by the great Russian composer Tchaikovsky over 50 years ago. We know that melody today as Moon Love.
Thank you.
moonlight, nothing but moonlight. Will you be gone when the dawn comes stealing through? Are these just moon dreams, grand while the moon beams? But when the moon fades away, will my dreams come true? Much as I love you, don't let me love you. If I must pay for your kiss with lonely tears, say it's not moon love, tell me it's true love. Say you'll be mine when the moon disappears. Say you'll be mine when the moon disappears.
Bud, how about giving the folks the latest taste test reports? In a taste test in Knoxville, Tennessee, Royal Crown won out over three leading competitors by votes of 3-1, 2-1, and almost 4-1.
Well, how about the one in Charleston, West Virginia?
In Charleston, Royal Crown won hands down over two other leading brands.
And how about the country as a whole?
Royal Crown wins 9 taste tests out of 10.
You can't fool folks on flavor. They can taste the difference every time. And most of the time, their taste selects Royal Crown. Try this sparkling cola drink, compare it with the others, and let your taste decide. You can get the handy home carton that holds 12 big bottles of Royal Crown and only costs a quarter. This will give you 12 big glasses of tangy, cooling refreshment for the weekend. Just remember to ask for Royal Crown.
Remember, too, that the makers of Royal Crown, Knee-High Corporation, Columbus, Georgia, are also makers of the famous Knee-High and Party Pack beverages.
Next week is National Pilgrimage Week in Lourdes, in southern France, where 1 million pious pilgrims seeking solace for the mental and physical ills will go to the sacred grotto of the Virgin Mary to visit the ever-blooming rose bush, which has been blooming winter and summer for 86 years. Then the Bishop of Lourdes will bless the crowd from the steps of the three churches in one with the words of an old Latin prayer, which I would like to repeat to you now. Even as this rose bush blooms and spends pleasant fragrance, so may your prayers flourish and bring you goodness, beauty, and contentment without compare.
Next week, the bottlers and neighborhood stores who serve you Royal Crown will again present Bob Ripley with more of his amazing Believe It or Nots, with V.A. Ralph and his orchestra, and lovely Linda Lee. This is Bud Collier wishing you good night. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's it for this time. Thanks for listening and join us next week.